Welcome to the Farcast, bringing you insights into Wall Street, Washington, and the world. Now here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome to the Farcast. I am Michael Farr. Thanks so much for joining us again this week. It is the end of March. Can you believe it? End of March. In like a lion, out like a lamb. It's like the predicting the stock market returns in January. Even 30 days later, nobody can remember what the hell the weather was on the 1st of March. Was that good or was that bad? And did it hold up? And what's going on with that groundhog? No one has ever remembered what my predictions were in the first week of January come December. So every year I always say it's going to go up 10%. And I come up with numbers that are up 10%. And it sounds good enough. It sounds basically generally borderline optimistic enough. And people feel good. And then they forget completely whether I was right or whether I was wrong. Been doing it for a long time, folks. It works. If anybody asks you in January, add 10% and go with that. You really can't get too far wrong. Dow is moving up. Dow is moving up. So S&P 5248, and we're still looking for Dow 40,000. Dow 40,000 does not look like it's going to happen today, folks. The two-year Treasury yield has bumped up, and the yield curve inversion for the wonky among us is now 40 basis points. That was down to 30. It got down to 20, 40. So the inversion of the yield curve, I'm not going to spend too much time, promise, is a little bit greater. And that's always been a predictor of recession, which nobody thinks we're going into recession. The old theory here, folks, has been that the Fed's going to cut because the economy is going to slow. And now it's going to be a soft landing. And it's when it starts to slow, the Fed will cut just a couple of times and everything's going to be hunky-dory. If you told that out of context to any experienced market person, they'd tell you we're smoking dope. Fed never gets that right, never works that well, never, ever, ever. But it might be that the Fed doesn't need to cut at all. Why would the Fed have to cut? The Fed would have to cut because the interest rates they've taken interest rates, short-term rates, so high now at this 5.25% level that the economy cannot withstand, that those rates are too high, that the real cost of money is too expensive, and that will cause the economy to slow down. So they need to be adjusted. What if they don't be adjusted, as Farr has been saying all year, all year? Now, a lot of the Fed folks and others are coming around to say, maybe they don't have to cut. Maybe we'll only have one cut. Clarita, the Fed governor, vice chairman, suggested the same thing. They're still seeing that inflation's looking a little bit stubborn. The Fed usually stays too long at the party and tends to ruin everything. We'll see if it happens this time. But until then, pay attention to the economy. It's continuing to expand. And there's still wage growth and there's pricing pressure towards the upside because demand is still alive. Pay attention to demand. Who's been saying this longer than anybody else? Jim Labenthal from Cerity Partners. When he was saying this last year, ladies and gentlemen, he was getting his butt kicked all over television on an almost daily basis. And Scott Wapner, my dear friend, was relentless in the Labenthal lancings that were occurring. And yet, who's laughing now, Wapner? Jim Labenthal joins us from Cerity Partners, our great friend. Welcome back, Jim.
Oh, Michael, if Scott hears this and I'm on the next show, he's going to tear me to pieces, but it's okay.
I'm sending him a copy. Okay. Hey, Harry, send Wapner a copy of this.
Yeah, it's funny to look back on that. First off, good to see you, as always. Thank you cheer this morning. Good to see you. Your intro is quite helpful, I have to say, because I'm sitting here, I'm marveling at the markets and this, you know, unending ascent to the top of Mount Olympus. And we all know there's got to be some give back somewhere. There's got to be some pullback. I don't know. I don't think it's going to be a real correction. I think it's going to be 5-7%. But I think the greater point is the one you just made, which is that do your analysis, focus on what matters in your analysis. And the economy is strong. It's not perfect. It's not perfect. There's little cracks here and there. I mean, you know, housing is kind of bumping along the bottom. Manufacturing's kind of struggling to get back to expansion, but seems like it's just almost there. Labor's hanging in there. Really can't fault the weekly jobless claims. But, you know, at some point, I think the economy will weaken. It's just not now. It's just not now. So what you've got is we're going into the first quarter's earnings season, and that's where we need some confirmation from outside of technology that these rallies, that there's fundamental sustenance behind them. That's what I'm really looking for. I know I'm kind of all over the place in my opening response here. I want to make one overarching point. The rally that we're experiencing right now is an everything rally. Okay, that's one heck of a start to the year, but everything's rallied. Cyclicals have rallied, value has rallied, financials, healthcare has rallied. For that to continue, there needs to be confirmation in the first quarter earnings that things are intact. And by that, I mean outperformance. We need these cyclicals to exceed expectations for the current share prices to be sustained.
Three things there, folks, three things. First, the one that's most important to the soon-to-be 63-year-old man, soon-to-be, would you please say your analysis instead of your analysis? The elision there is a concern for someone my age. I hear your analysis, and I'm thinking,
What have you been doing on your Saturday nights that you would be worried about that?
I'll tell you, not much on my Saturday nights. Not much. The everything rally means a broadening of the rally from this narrow group of tech leadership. And yet, when the risk on trade comes, as it has over and over and over again all through last year and all this year, it's still in those tech stocks, and the NASDAQ roars and the others lag. And what we need to see, I think, next, Jim, is what happens with earnings. You're exactly right. The Fed has gone quiet. We're hearing from the Fed governors who are giving us, frankly, I think, a more bullish speech. But we have to see the earnings come through. So Jim Labenthal is exactly right. Will these higher interest rates begin to hurt profits? Will the higher wages begin to hurt profits? Or will these earnings reports show us, that they've been able to pass on price increases to the consumer? Have they been able to maintain margins? And have companies been able to grow share around the country and around the world? So this is it. This is what we do for a living. Look at those longer term companies. And Jim and I were talking about one a week or two ago. I don't remember, Jim, that was down significantly on the year, that has a A-rated balance sheet and a 6% plus dividend, yes. And it hasn't moved at all. And I'm waiting and I'm waiting and I'm waiting. And I look at companies like that because we can get distracted by the market. And I invest in companies and then I follow them very closely and see if they're executing well. I'm going to watch that one. And I haven't decided exactly when. And I keep thinking if I got another 3 points off of that one, I'd buy it in a heartbeat. That would be about a 10% move or more. So what are you thinking, Jim?
Well, I'm thinking about what you're saying here. And, you know, the company in question is a pharmaceutical company. When I think about the pharmaceutical industry right now, I think about those diet drugs, those GLP-1 producers that have just shot through the roof and are now trading at, you know, 60 times forward earnings, which for a drug company is phenomenal. And I wonder, Michael, because the company that you're speaking about is one that we're all talking about, right? Any money manager is looking at that. And I wonder if we're all looking at that because we feel like maybe the rest of the market is too high and we're looking for bargains. You know, we're in the Dollar General store when everybody is in Saks Fifth Avenue or whatever the upscale equivalent is. That can be an indication that the market is a little ahead of itself. And I don't, folks, I need to make a public service announcement here. When I talk or Michael talks about the market being a little ahead of itself, please do not call up Michael and say, sell all my stocks. That's not what we're talking about. What we're talking about is that as the market moves from point A to point B over a 1, 3, or 5 year period, and point B being much greater than point A, along that path, there are kinks in the road. There are moments where we go down. And I said this a second ago. We're due. Everybody's saying this. I know this. Okay. We're due for a 5 to 7% pullback. Now, having said that, and having noted that everybody is saying that, we also have to note that there is no way to know the hour at which that comes. So please don't try to time it.
Oh, if you want to. Whoop, Labenthal, big whoop, 5 to 7%. Big deal. I mean, you know how many days I wake up and my back hurts, or I've got a knee ache and I have to limp around for a couple of days. Big damn deal. That's, you know.
But I think everybody, Michael, I think a lot of people, probably you, definitely me, are going to be looking forward to that. Why? Because as this market has rallied, I've trimmed some winners. And that means, you know, you raise some cash. Do you really want to put it back to work in this market right now? I'm a little hesitant. So the cash is building up. Now, folks, I just said a second ago, don't call up Michael and tell him to sell all your stocks. That's not the point here.
Oh, hell, you can. Go ahead. I won't do it. I mean, you know, we'll fight about that. But right. Go ahead.
You trim your winners. And then you say to yourself, do I want to recycle that cash right back into the markets right now? Usually, in a moment like this, there's a little bit of a delay function. And in that delay function, I wouldn't mind a 5 to 7% pullback. You're absolutely right, Michael, when you say big deal. You're absolutely right. Now, here's the second public service announcement for today. When it happens, folks, the media will be crying from the rooftops and the mountaintops how this is it. This is the big payback. Here we go. The long and lagged effects, and all the usual suspects will be trotted out. It's the public debt. It's the election. It's consumer credit. It's geopolitics. It is, again, go back to the economy, go back to the strength of the labor market. A 5 to 7% pullback will be a healthy buying opportunity, nothing more.
Okay. And I'm going to disagree with Jim just a little bit.
Ooh, I like it when we do this.
I'm going to disagree a little bit. I don't believe that you're going to hear people saying this is it. They might say this is the beginning. They might say it's going to get worse. But what they never really get, they're going to tell you they want more. It'll go down. So let's talk real numbers, folks, because this is what you have to do. You can't just sit here and say 5 to 7%. I think if it goes down 5 to 7%. What does it mean? It means that the S&P 500 is at 5250. And if it goes down 10%, that's 4725. So what I want you to do is take one of those Post-it notes and put it on your damn computer and say at 4725 or at 4800 or 4900, I'm going to buy, because that's what I've told myself I'm going to do. And I'm not going to sit here and go, ooh, it's at 4900. I wonder if it'll go to 4800. I bet it'll go to 4800. I can wait till 4800. You will not do it. You're going to sit here with these sort of feelings, and feelings will screw you up every time. Feelings are not your friend. So I don't think you will hear anybody ring the bell. I do not think you will hear anybody get this right and come out and say, now is when you have to do it, unless perhaps it's Jim Labenthal, because that's what he said year ago. And if I hear him say it again, I'm going to go in with every bit of cash I have. And keep in mind, folks, there's $7 trillion in money market funds out there. A lot of that money is still waiting to buy. You got to pry it loose from that 5% money market, but it's ready to buy. Final word, Jim?
I literally have the yellow sticky on my computer. It says 4,900. It says 4,900, folks. You can take from that what you want. And, you know, what I would also say is when it reaches that level, look at where the bargains are at that time. Don't predetermine right now, oh, I'm going to buy Apple when the S&P 500 gets to 4,900. Just look around the landscape and see where you want to be. But 4,900, there you go.
Jim Labenthal, partner at Cerity Partners, a guest host, actually, of the Farcast, our go-to guest host, and our great friend. Thank you, Jim, so much.
Oh, great to see you, Michael. Thank you.
We'll be right back with Dan Mahaffey. Big deal in New York today. Obama, Clinton, and President Biden going to raise a lot of money for President Biden. And the quote from President Obama is, we really hope Joe doesn't F this up. When we come back on the Farcast.
Thank you for joining us this week on the Farcast. Now
it's time for political analyst Dan Mahaffey and your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back. Joining me now, Dan Mahaffey, vice chairman of the Dr. Scholl Foundation from Chicago, from also still a part of the Center for the Study of the Presidency in Congress, and our senior political analyst on the Farcast. Welcome back, Dan.
Happy opening day, Michael. Good to be talking to you.
Happy opening day to you, Dan. What a great day it is. It really does kind of make you smile a little bit to think about today. Dan, before we start, I just want to give a nod to the late Senator Joe Lieberman, who passed away yesterday, senator from Connecticut, was the Democratic nominee for vice president and became an independent. He was the first Jewish candidate on the national ticket of any major party. When I tell you in Washington that this was just one of the good guys, Joe Lieberman was a good guy. I'm not talking about party affiliations. I'm not saying that I liked all of Joe's politics. I'm saying that this was a reasonable and nice and good guy. And his way and method of being a politician in Washington harkened back to those ideal days of Tip O'Neill and Ronald Reagan, where people would sit down and have that beer together at night and disagree during the daytime. Someone, I've met him a number of times, chatted with him. I truly admired Senator Lieberman and was always grateful that men like that, people like that, would go into public service and devote so much of their lives to making their country better the best way they could. You ever meet him, Dan?
Very briefly, but also knew so many who worked with him, had the opportunity to see some of the accomplishments that he put into place, and a reminder too that he was a generation of politician who was guided by a true moral North Star, not focus groups, not the political winds. You know, he wasn't licking his finger and sticking it in the wind. He was truly guided by both his belief in this country and truly too what was the, you know, that there was right and wrong in the world.
I think so. More, believe it or not, folks, for my, at least my friends on the right, you want more Joe Lieberman's on Capitol Hill. You really do. Okay. I started out before you got on talking about this big rally in New York today. Who is it? Stephen Colbert is going to interview Clinton, Obama, and President Biden all at the same time, Carnegie Hall, raising huge amounts of money. President Obama has been stepping up, getting more involved in the campaign. And Politico can't use the following, quoted and cited a Democrat remembering Obama saying once, "Don't underestimate Joe's ability to F things up." We know that both sides have that ability. And in fact, this seems to be the presidential race of who's going to put their foot in their mouth, not first, but
more
frequently. Not if they will, but when they will and how often they will. And will it be the foot, you know, just half the foot, or will they take it?
It'll be the first debates to have both a podiatrist and dentist on emergency standby to remove feet from mouths as it goes on. So,
did you hear that, Pam? Vice chairman of the Dr. Scholl Foundation has now made a podiatrist reference on the Farcast.
It's all podiatry jokes from here on out, Michael.
It only took him three Farcasts, Pam, but he got it. Go ahead, damn shameless self-promotion for the Dr. Scholl Foundation.
Yeah. No, I think, Michael, the fact of this, though, is that you're going to have the candidates, and we've talked about this in past episodes. This is now minimize your candidate's flaws and play up your opponent's ones. And that's the only tactic these guys really have, particularly, too, if you're going to try and push, as we say, the double haters one way or the other, or at least to stay home. That said, I think the Biden campaign is going to get around this, and it's going to be a challenge compared to 2020. You can't just keep him in the basement or on the Zoom campaign, as it was pejoratively said at the time. He needs to be out there. He needs to be more active. But he will also have the advantage of incumbency. Look, there are things like the motorcade, Air Force One, provided he gets off it smoothly. All those things require the public sees that, and it creates a more, boisterous picture of his power and authority when you do have that as president. The other thing, though, is
kind of ironic, right? Isn't it kind of ironic that Pope Francis, now in a wheelchair with people helping him stand and sit, has become only more beloved? And anything that looks even similar gets nothing but criticism for Joe. Nobody wants to love old people in our country. I mean, and nobody's questioning Pope Francis's mental acuity either. And maybe there's no reason to question it, but the man is in his 80s. So based on everybody else's argument, shouldn't you be wondering if the Pope's really on as sharp as he was 10 years ago? I mean, I don't know. You're not allowed to take shots at the Pope, I guess, except... I actually, I grew up Catholic and I got a lot of Pope jokes. Okay. But is this, let me go back. I want to push back. Why can't they keep Joe Biden in the basement again and send Clinton and Obama out to get reelected? I mean,
they could win the election again without him. He's too feeble. He can't do the job. I think getting him on the stage with the others, getting him in these group settings where you're again reminded of perhaps the more popular brand of the party than him right now, all those things will help. I think the other thing they'll do is, carefully control his appearances, because we understand, too, that the Trump appearances are anything but controllable. And in many ways, they will let not only Donald Trump's words speak for themselves. I think they'll be a little more nuanced, of course, than when Hillary put her foot in her mouth and called half of America deplorables, or at least seemed like she did. But what the Biden campaign will do is let Trump supporters and Trump's own material speak for itself. And that's what they think as, college-educated voters, suburban voters. And heck, even Paul Ryan was saying this, noted Democratic strategist Paul Ryan was saying, look, these people at the rallies, these people who come out, they just scare suburban educated voters. They scare the swing voters. And you also see that, too. Now, look, the politics of Alabama have been thrown around by that IVF decision there. But one of the things that Democrats are talking about, and caveat that with a low turnout special election, but Democrats have flipped a ruby red House seat, state House seat in Alabama, a state like Alabama. So, they'll say these polls right now, and look, everyone has a little bit of, takes a heavy dose of copium, as I call it. But some of these polls, they see Biden getting closer. The American people are starting now, finally. We've been talking about this for a while, but your average Joe is finally realizing that this is going to be a choice between Biden and Trump, as much as they hate it. And these are the things that are starting to, at least Democrats feel that Biden has more momentum.
I'm going to tell you, Democratic National Committee, and I am not a Democrat. Here's Farr's advice, and you should listen to me. Listen to me. You want to win? You want Joe Biden to win? You keep him in the White House. You have official scripted positions. You have good presidential moments using Air Force One and everything else, and you limit his access, and you get Obama out there on every stump speech, smiling, saying, let me tell you about Joe. Joe Biden did this. Joe Biden does that. You let Obama talk about the issues. You let Obama champion what he's done in Ukraine. You let Obama talk about the position in Israel and China, and Joe will get reelected. If you can get Joe out of the way, Obama will get reelected. Obama get reelected, I believe, by a landslide right now. There have been very few presidents who had the ability to speak and reach the public like President Obama, other than President Clinton, who actually seems fairly frail himself these days. But Obama's not, and Obama's younger than I am by a couple of months. I'm finally glad to see that he's starting to get some white hair. Okay, I wanna move on to Russia. By the way, I liked precious little that came out of the Obama years. Precious little and disagreed with a whole hell of a lot and really disliked 30% of what he did, I hated. 60% I really, or 70% I really didn't like. I'll give him credit on a couple of things, as I do every president. But damn, could the man talk. And he was dignified in the Oval Office and as president. He brought dignity into the White House. So did George W. Bush. Dignity, very dignified president, presidential. Okay, Putin has been reelected again. We're watching that this, what we had this horrible terrorist attack, and somehow Putin's trying to spin it as part of Ukraine and doesn't even want to talk about Islamic terrorists in Russia. What does this mean, Dan? We're going to run out of time because I've got to get to the Middle East too. So get me
moving. I think you see one that the Russian security apparatus is hollowed out and focused so wholly on Ukraine that they've lost the ability to track these terrorists, as well as ignoring the warnings that the U.S. gave them before this happened. So Putin will use this to push for being harder on Ukraine. We need to see how this reminds the Russian people is that their regime is failing them.
Their regime is failing them. Did they ever get that message, or is the spin so tight and so complete in Russia that they will never get that message?
There's very tight spin, but it's hard to hide something like this or spin it so convincingly. The fact that this is affecting the Russian people directly, as well as what we see the Ukrainians doing separately. Now, let's be clear. The attack on the concert hall was Islamic State terrorists. The Ukrainians, though, also managing to hit oil and energy infrastructure in Russia. So the invincibility that Putin likes to put forward is shattered. The fear is that with invincibility shattered, the crackdown is what comes as the justification for staying in power.
Dan, we had a mold problem in our house here in Florida. Up in one of the bedrooms, there was a leak next to the chimney. Mold is a big, bad issue here in Florida. You had to tear apart everything, remediate the mold, and rebuild. One of the carpenter I had up there rebuilding was this very young man, and he was an excellent carpenter. And he had some sort of Eastern European accent and said, a very young man, and said he was from Ukraine. And I said, you're from Ukraine. How old are you? 22. I said, you're 22 and you're here from Ukraine. When did you come? 2 years ago. 2 years ago from Ukraine. How did you get to this country from Ukraine 2 years ago? Through Mexico. I said, you came through Mexico to get to the U.S.? Yes, there was a policy. There was a provision. I said, and you left because of the war? No, he said, I had plans. I was in university and my cousins were here, and I left 2 days before the war on a planned trip to come. And Mexico was the entry point at Tijuana. And we went to San Jose and we flew to Tampa. We went to then LA and flew to Tampa, actually went through Paris, but it was all part of the planned trip. But I have no desire to go back right now. And I'm building a life here, and I was in university. And so I'm listening to all of this and how this young man that came at 20 years old and has been building a life and making a living. And he was a business administration student in university before he left. And now he's a carpenter because he can't afford to be in university or anywhere else and came with no money. And just an amazing story. And I said, tell me about the United States. And he said, yes, you can have a much better life here. And you can earn a better living, and it's, you live better in this country. I said, do you have any desire to go back to your country, to Ukraine? Yes, I want to go back to Ukraine. I want to live in Ukraine. I want to live in my country. I love my country, and I want to have a life there. If I can have a life there, I prefer to have a life there than anywhere else. I said, what was most disappointing? Took him out to dinner last night. We sat for about 2 hours and talked. It was fascinating. And I said, what's the most disappointing thing about the United States, having watched all the movies and all the ideas you had? What's the most disappointing part about the U.S.? He said, oh, that's easy. It's the food. Awful food. I said, awful food. You got to be kidding me. And the Eastern Europeans telling me, we've got awful food. Oh, my God. He says, oh, we have the rich sauces and the rich gravies and the wonderful meats and the vegetables and the this and that. And he says, American food's awful. I said, okay, good. I love it. So it's not his home and it's not his food and it's not his mother's cooking. And that was really the message. It always comes down to a very human message. And when we think about Ukraine and when we think about Russia and what's going on, folks, we need to remember that human message. When we think about those people, Dan, of course, I've got to get to Israel and what's going on in Palestine. Pressure is ramping up on Israel. A number of Christian leaders now have petitioned President Biden to really intervene more strongly in what is being called genocide in Palestine. Can you give me 30 seconds? I got to go.
Yeah, I think you see the situation on the ground worsening, the pressure on the U.S. How do you get through to Netanyahu? We've talked about the complexities of that. USAID saying there's famine in northern Gaza, the risk of famine imminent throughout the whole of the strip, a true humanitarian crisis, and it's affecting our politics too. Latest poll has super majorities of both independents and Democrats now opposed to Israel's war. So affecting U.S. politics as well, and the administration in a tough position here.
Please come back next week, Dan. We're going to talk about more. Coming up, ladies and gentlemen, Dr. Jeffrey Lacker, former president of the Richmond Federal Reserve Bank, PhD economist and scholar, and my great friend. Please stay with us.
Michael Farr and the Farrcast are proud to support Heroes, Inc. Heroes supports the spouses and children of law enforcement officers and firefighters who gave their lives in the line of duty to the greater Washington, D.C. community. Their singular goal is to honor the supreme sacrifice made by these individuals by caring for their families. Heroes' work begins within 24 hours of the tragic loss and continues indefinitely. We invite you to learn more about Heroes' mission at heroes.org. We hope that you will consider supporting Heroes as they endeavor to honor those who protect us. That's heroes.org. Heroes, here for you, here for good. And now, back to the Farrcast and your host, Michael Farr. We appreciate you listening into the Farrcast this week. And now to introduce this week's special guest, here's your host, Michael Farr.
Welcome back to the Farrcast. Joining me now, my great friend, one of the smartest guys ever get to talk to, ladies and gentlemen, ever. He's just that smart. But you know what? He's that smart. You wouldn't believe how nice he is. But the great thing about him is that he's learned to speak English, which is something that can be really hard for really smart people. They get all wound up in the back of their minds, and all of those textbook phrases start spinning around, and they think that it's English until they talk to us and our eyes glaze over. Dr. Jeffrey Lacker is former president of the Federal Reserve Bank of Richmond. He is currently the senior affiliated scholar for the Mercator Center at George Mason University and a member of the Shadow Open Market Committee. Welcome back, Jeff.
My pleasure, Michael. That is super kind. That's effusive, over-the-top introduction, Michael. And it's something I've come to know over the years I can count on from you.
Absolutely. Your mother wrote it and I read it, okay?
Whether I deserve it or not.
Yeah. That was the deal. Jeff, when I spoke at the University of Delaware's annual economic forecast for the 16th year, if you can believe it or not, in February for the 16th year, Pat Harker was there and he was talking about cuts for this year, two or three cuts. He said, not in March, maybe May. And I looked at him and said, on the stage, I said, why? Why do you need to cut? The economic data are constructive. Wages are still increasing. Unemployment is still historically low. The economy is still expanding. And it doesn't look like you have inflation completely under control. Why the hell would you cut rates? And frankly, I think he hemmed and hawed. I think he was giving me the party line, and I think he agreed with me. And then I looked out at the audience and said, I want you to know that Pat Harker calls me, sometimes three or four times a week to ask my opinion on economics and what he should do at the next Fed meeting. And there was a silence in the room. And people are looking at him and he's laughing. You know, he's sitting in the front row while I'm up on the stage. And it's just, and he's laughing. True, I said, I'm laughing. Pat Harker doesn't call me about anything, I assure you. Now, I think he should. Don't you all think he should?
And I do. You should call him. You should call you. You should call me and I'll relay.
There. Yeah. That's right. You know, you should call me Harker. I have access to lacquer. You know, there's an old story on Wall Street. There was a thing that was done in, I think it was the early 60s, where they had a monkey who would actually pick stocks out of the newspaper against a stockbroker. Yeah. And they did this thing on the radio. And the monkey won. The monkey won, a huge 70% of the time. And the stockbroker's business doubled in the year and a half. And they were like, why do you keep doing this? You're beaten by a monkey. And he said, my business has doubled in a year and a half. And they said, why has it doubled in a year and a half? He said, because we record the day before and I know what the monkey picked. I have access to the monkey, is what he said. That was it. That was it.
That was from back in the day when they rigged game shows, you know?
Yeah. And
so, yeah, those were the days in broadcasting. You could do a lot, you know?
You could do a lot.
But, I won't claim to be able to improve on a random walk down Wall Street or, you know, a monkey throwing darts. But I could tell you some things about Harker's prediction. So he's, you know, a lot of people have made a lot over the, you know, about the predictions of the Federal Open Market Committee members, the Fed members, about where interest rates are going to go. And a lot of focus in the financial media is on how many cuts this year. And what there's a survey that the FOMC does of its members.
Right.
They ask them, what do you think the federal funds rate is going to be at the end of this year, the end of next year, the end of the year after that, and in the longer run? And they compile those, and then the median is the one that Wall Street seems to focus on, the financial press seems obsessed with. And the median didn't go from 3 to 2, as people thought. Now, if you look at all the responses, they shifted up. It's just the median didn't move. But there are two things to keep in mind about this that I don't think people appreciate. And I don't think the financial reporting really does justice to. One is that they do not know what the funds rate's going to be at the end of the year. It's going to depend on how the data comes in between now and then. And that's something that this focus on, is it going to be 3 cuts? Is it going to be 2 cuts? It's sort of missed in the dialogue about that. So the data could come in a way that makes 3 cuts, you know, the thing they do, or it could come in a way that keeps them from cutting rates. And I think the risks are on the side of they're not going to do as many rate cuts as people think. And in fact, I think that it's plausible they don't do any cuts this year if the inflation data doesn't cooperate.
That's what I think. You know, Jeff, the old line is that bull markets don't die of natural causes. They are killed, and they are typically killed by the Federal Reserve staying too long at the party and keeping rates too high for too long. When I have done stupid things throughout my life, and I have a lot of data points here for the stupid things I've done throughout my life, that often I could tell you, you know, it seemed like the right thing to do at the time, or it seemed like a good idea at the time, and maybe I wasn't thinking things through as thoroughly as I should have, or I just made the mistake. But the Federal Reserve, when they look at the inflation data right now, and the data are still showing some strength, they're not just rolling over and dying. Is this the moment when the Fed is going to look back and say, well, it seemed like the right thing to do at the time, and then find out they were wrong?
So they're looking at risks on both sides, and they're acutely aware of the instances in the past in which the economy's gone into a recession. It's taken some time for that to be apparent to the Fed and to, you know, people watching the data. And the Fed has had to cut rates, and it cuts rates precipitously. And in hindsight, it looks like the Fed maybe stayed too long on the high side. Now, there aren't any signs of that now. The labor market's strong. Spending growth was like 3% last year when people were expecting 1.5%. So it doesn't look like there are any signs of that, but they're afraid that that might develop. And that's a reason for them to kind of cut preemptively to prevent a recession. On the other side, the other risk that they have to be aware of, and I think people ought to be out in, out in the public ought to be aware of, is that they screwed up in the 70s by easing policy before inflation had gotten down and under control. They took their foot off the brakes before inflation was down, and inflation stabilized and then rose from there. It happened in 75, 76. They eased because there was a recession. Inflation was coming down, but it stopped coming down, and then it went up again. Same thing earlier in the decade and later. So that's a risk they need to be aware of as well. So they got a lot of progress on inflation last year, more than they expected. A lot of it was in goods prices that have stopped rising, have sort of flattened out. And they don't look like they're going down. The services sector, that's the trouble. And service sector prices are still going strong. They're too strong to be consistent with 2% inflation. So they got some benefits of goods prices coming down that isn't going to persist. And you've got services inflation, which hasn't come down to a level that it needs to be for inflation to run at 2% on average, averaging over services and goods. And the big thing about services is that a lot of services costs are labor, more than goods. A lot of services costs in the consumer basket are labor costs. And wage rates are still rising at a rate that's not consistent with 2% inflation. So we haven't gotten inflation out of the economy. That's what the Fed's looking at.
Are they too long at the party, Jeff? Are they going to stay too long at the party, or do you think their odds are increasing they're going to get this right?
I think they'll get it right, but I think it's going to mean that over the next few months, they're going to have to continually back away from rate cuts. I think they're going to keep postponing rate cuts for the whole year. I think they're going to go into the third or fourth quarter before it looks like you're going to be able to cut rates.
So do I. And they've got to dance around this election and make sure that
they don't get tangled up in that.
They've got to get around that. So things to you look, it sounds like, okay in the economy.
Inflation, I mean, the last two inflation numbers have been terrible. You know, they're ticking back up again. And so it looks like they've got a ways to go, this sort of last mile problem people call.
Quick change. If we look at GDP growth as being that combination of increasing the workforce plus productivity, we aren't seeing any real tick up in the labor force, nor do we anticipate a significant tick up in the labor force or the fertility rate. So we go back to productivity. Ladies and gentlemen, don't I sound like I know what I'm talking about? Honest to God. I mean, the veneer of authenticity is about a millimeter here, folks, I promise.
Productivity.
Productivity. So when we look at productivity and we say that we've got AI coming online and we've got so many tasks that no longer require human beings, and we know that computers don't need to rest and they don't need to go to sleep at night, and they're picking up on speeds and processing times and everything else. Could we see a AI-generated driven surge in productivity that could continue economic growth to take us at least beyond the drag in population and workforce growth?
You know, this podcast is a great example. I mean, generated by AI, Jeff Lacker and Michael Farr are actually off at the beach somewhere.
Yes.
Playing golf.
Yes.
And so our labor time is freed up, and this podcast is generated by a computer. It works great.
It could have, my kids, when they showed me 2 years ago ChatGPT, they said, write an article on the Federal Reserve's blah, 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 in the style of CNBC Michael Farr. And in 15 seconds, there was an article that was exactly correct in my voice and probably better than I would have written, had I taken the half an hour to write such
I was at a conference at the Richmond Fed last December, and an economist was presenting something about AI. And she puts up on a thing, an essay just like that, that she prompted it to make in the voice of Jeffrey Lacker. It was terrible, but it was cute. It was close, you know, but no cigar. Seriously, though, AI is very exciting. Possibilities are endless. I think unanticipated possibilities are, you know, kind of, you know, what we're not thinking about that you could do with it are exciting, too. But, you know, the history of technological innovations is that, yeah, there's a little bit of disruption in the labor market in the short run. But, you know, in the long run, people sort of redeploy. There's a lot of shuffling that goes on in the economy all the time. You know, 3, 4, 5 million people leave a job in any one month, gain a new job in any one month, you know. So I don't look for it to have a gigantic macroeconomic effect in the near term in terms of productivity. But back to labor force, the economy has benefited to an unexpected extent in recent quarters from a surge in immigration in the last couple of years. So that's the thing that offers the prospect of, providing some stimulus for the economy.
Folks, please turn off your political ears when you hear Dr. Lacker say that.
Just say it like it is.
Dr. Lacker is just giving you a stat. That's a statistic. That's a fact. It's not.
It's not a value laden claim.
In fact, anything else, you've had an increase through immigration, legal or illegal. You've got more workers in the economy, and that's shown an uptick, and that will help economic growth. Does everybody want legal immigration? Yes, I haven't found one person who said, gee, we need more illegal immigration. Nobody says that. Do we need immigration? If our population's not growing, economies grow when their populations grow. It's one of the most fundamental correlations that you'll ever find that's run consistently across all economies. So you need population growth. Final thing, Jeff, because we're out of time, please. What worries you over the next year? Where's the real risk? What one thing might be keeping you awake at night? And I'm praying for my thing, just to throw it in, is that Jay Powell keeps his job. I want Jay Powell to keep his job. I think he's doing a good job. Do not throw that monkey wrench, Mr. President Trump, if that turns out to be you. But I don't know what you're going to
say. I think inflation is still uncertain. And I think that I'm hoping for the Fed to stick with it, to get the last mile done, to get us down to a reasonable inflation rate. Because if that just hangs over their head, then if there's a shock, they'll be caught in the headlights. Like, do we keep fighting inflation, or do we fight, you know, do we lower rates for the labor market's sake? So I just hope we get down to a reasonable inflation rate soon rather than later.
Last mile of the marathon, always the toughest.
Yep.
Dr. Jeffrey Lacker, former president of the Richmond Federal Reserve Bank, the senior affiliated scholar at the Mercatus Center at George Mason University, a member of the Shadow Open Market Committee, and our great friend. Jeff, thanks so much for being with us again. We always learn so much.
My pleasure, Michael.
That's it for another Farcast, ladies and gentlemen, as we cover Wall Street, Washington, and the world, bringing you an insiders to help us all think a little bit better about the world in which we live, form more informed opinions, and also think about our portfolios, investments, and what's happening in the economy at large. We're going to bring it back again next week. Do it all again. Please join us. Please come back. Happy Easter, everyone. And rest in peace, Senator Joe Lieberman, one of the good guys.
Indeed.
Thank you for everybody on the Farcast, my producer, Harry Jennings, everybody at Hightower and Farr Miller in Washington. I'm Michael Farr. Thanks so much.
Thanks for joining us this week on the Farcast. We hope you've enjoyed the show as much as we enjoy making it for you. Thanks to our guests, Jim Labenthal, Dan Mahaffey, and special guest, Dr. Jeffrey Lacker. Farcast is produced by Michael Farr and Harry Jennings and comes to you weekly for free on all major podcast platforms, including Apple, Spotify, TuneIn, and Google Podcasts. You can stream past episodes as well as subscribe so you never miss a new one. We love reading all of your notes, and we try to reply to as many as we can. You can reach us at hjennings@farrmiller.com. Let us know any questions you have about past episodes or questions you'd like us to address in upcoming shows. Please subscribe and share the show, and we'll be back with you next week. And on a personal note, I'd like to say a big happy birthday to our dear friend, Kenny Polcari. Kenny has been an instrumental part of the show since the first episode 7 years ago. I am sometime asked, is Kenny really all that exuberant and funny in real life? Well, folks, Kenny's bigger than life in real life. One of the great joys of been doing this show has been getting to know Kenny Polcari. He's one of the good guys. Have a great birthday, KP, you sexy beast. Take care, stay safe, stay healthy. Thanks for listening to the Farcast. Wall Street, Washington, and the world. Farr Miller in Washington is a group comprised of investment professionals registered with Hightower Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. Some investment professionals may also be registered with Hightower Securities, LLC, member FINRA and SIPC. Advisory services are offered through Hightower Advisors, LLC. Securities are offered through Hightower Securities, LLC. All information referenced herein is from sources believed to be reliable. Farr Miller in Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC have not independently verified the accuracy or completeness of the information contained in this podcast. Farr Miller in Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC and any of its affiliates make no representations or warranties, expressed or implied, as to the accuracy or completeness of the information or for statements or errors or omissions or results obtained from the use of this information. Farr Miller in Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC and any of its affiliates assume no liability for any action made or taken in reliance on or relating in any way to the information. This podcast and the materials contained herein were created for informational purposes only. The opinions expressed are solely those of the authors and do not represent those of Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates. Farr Miller in Washington and Hightower Advisors, LLC, or any of its affiliates do not provide tax or legal advice. This material was not intended or written to be used or presented in any way to any entity as tax or legal advice. Clients are urged to consult their tax and/or legal advisors for related questions.